Today's episode is called Connect with Your Customer, and this is episode number 205.
Welcome to Doubt the Doubts, where we're killing the doubts that kill the dreams, with your host, Paul Blaze.
Well, now that you've got those earbuds in and you've settled into your run or your workout or you're working in the yard or you've got this pumping into the speakers of your car, either which way, welcome to Doubt the Doubts, and I am grateful to have you here. Now, today we are talking to Thomas Umstadt Jr., and he is going to walk us through how we would go through or go about making a great connection with your customers. And he's got a great three-step process of how you engage a customer and how you make a great connection with them. And it comes about with answering their questions, anticipating their needs, and being able to solve a problem. So he's got a lot more to say about that. And I think you're going to get a lot of great info out of this. So let's listen into my conversation with Thomas today. So Thomas, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on to Doubt the Doubts. Really stoked to have you.
Thanks, Paul. I'm excited to be here.
Well, Thomas, I'm excited to have you on the show because there's some things I'd like to talk with you about. But before we get into that, how about initially, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and then tell us about what you are doing. Like, tell us a bit like where you're born, where you grew up, you're living. And then also after that, then get us into the business and the endeavors that you're involved in now. Sound good?
All right. So I grew up as a nerd.
Nice.
Some of your listeners may know what that feels like. In Austin, all my friends' dads were inventing the future. They're all engineers, and they were all bringing home technology, and we were learning stuff together. And I ended up building my first website when I was 13 years old. And I taught a web design class to some homeschool students at 16. So I got a really early start with technology. And so I went off to college, and while in college, I started this business trying to do audiobooks, and it wasn't really working. And while I'm there, I'm like, I should write a book because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
And so I go to a writer's conference and I go to the obligatory marketing talk. And there's this lady, she's up front. She's like, you'll need a blog, you'll need a website. And I'm looking around and it's a room full of mostly women in their 40s and 50s. And they're all just terrified, like the idea of starting a website and starting a blog. And so I turn over to the lady next to me I had made friends with. And I was like, yeah, I'll build you a website. No problem. I've been doing this for a long time. Well, that one free website turned into referrals to all of her friends and for paid sites. And suddenly I'm going to conferences, not for my book, but just to sell websites. And I found this at the second conference, people would see my flyer and literally write me a check for a website right there at the conference. I was like, I think I found a niche that no one else is really targeting. And so I ended up pivoting and left audiobooks altogether and started building websites and doing marketing for authors. And about that time, Twitter was starting to take off. And so I wanted to start an experiment. I wanted to see if you could start a blog and get it popular just based on Twitter.
Fascinating.
And so the name of the blog was Author Tech Tips. And so I did zero promotion for it in any other avenue but Twitter. And so I started blogging and sharing the posts on Twitter. People started retweeting them. And then, you know, it gets featured by Writer's Digest as one of the most helpful websites for authors. And, you know, I kept working on it, And finally, we bought authormedia.com, which was a better name. And we moved the blog over to Author Media. And then I started hiring people. And, you know, one thing led to another. And now I don't really build websites anymore. I mostly sit in meetings.
Which is everybody's goal, is like, how can I get to the point of where I sit in a meeting?
Oh, I want people to ask me questions and want me to make decisions all day long. That just sounds like the most amazing thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, I like
Let
it.
Let me ask you real quickly, Thomas. I'd like you to back up about the idea of Twitter as the sole source of marketing. You took a website and made it one of the most significant websites on writing, correct?
Writer's Digest thinks we are, at least in the marketing realm. There's much better ones for how to write. That we
Exactly. So here's my question. So you started this blog from zero readers, zero subscribers, zero RSS feed subscribers.
What did your numbers look like the first day you started your Twitter campaign?
I don't know. I had maybe 4 or 5 visitors. Maybe 3 of them were myself.
Okay. Okay.
So anytime you're starting something like this, and we've helped a lot of clients do this sort of thing since then, it's very slow at the beginning. It's a lot like investing for retirement. It's this exponential curve that starts with, you know, teeny tiny numbers at first, and then it builds on itself. And there's really one secret. The Twitter part was cool. I don't think that would work as well now because of the way people use Twitter and how the attention is going. But the real secret that is very reproducible, and any of you listening can copy this secret, is to do this one thing. And it sounds really simple, but I guarantee you this is the key to success. And that is answer customer questions and answer them and word the blog post that answers the question in the same language that they ask the question. So I would go to a writer's conference. And I'd spend the entire time at the writers' conference talking with authors about technology, talking to them about social media, and I'd get the same questions over and over again. Like one question that was really common in 2008 was, how do I get Twitter on my phone? That is not how I would ask the question as a nerd. I would ask, what Twitter app do you recommend? And that's what all the posts were optimizing for. And so I wrote a blog post, how to get Twitter on your phone. And it talked about apps, and it was one of the top results for that search phrase, which was an incredibly popular search phrase back in the day. And so that simple thing of spending time with your customers, finding out what questions they're asking, and then answering those questions is just unbelievable marketing.
I like that, using their language to answer the question. I mean, it would be like going to France and trying to answer a question that is posed to you in French and trying to answer it in Swahili. It just doesn't work well, you know? So that idea of trying to capture the feel, the tone, the cadence of what they're saying and trying to match that is just brilliant. In fact, that's one of the things you do when you go for a job interview, is that you try to match the mannerisms of the person that's interviewing you. And those interviews, those people tend to like you better if you mimic some of their behaviors, like the way they cross their legs. Perhaps you crossed your legs like that. And it's amazing how that simple mimicry becomes so effective. So I thought that's just a brilliant thing you had to say there, Thomas.
It's also good SEO, because if you're using the same words that they're typing into Google, you're going to outrank the bigger players who are using more generic language.
How do you avoid falling into the trap then, Thomas, of becoming an insider? And what I mean by that is that it's so easy to start talking shop along in the terms of shop talk. For instance, I can go as one of the businesses that I run is an electrical contracting. I do electrical design, lighting design, that type of stuff. And I can go into the supply house and I can say something like, you tried to put a BR40 into an H99. And I'll get a laugh. People in there just like said, that is the funniest thing to say, Paul. I can't believe it, because it's inside talk. You, on the other hand, are saying, what the stink is he talking about? I was talking about the size of a light bulb, a BR40. It's a big light bulb going into a small light fixture, an H99, which takes a little BR20. So like the joke, it's inside talk though, but it's so easy to fall into that. And how do you avoid that? Is it specifically by keeping your head out of the clouds and trying to keep it on the level of the customer?
Well, there's actually a great book that addresses this very question. That's one of my favorite books on marketing, and it's called Made to Stick. And it's about how to get ideas to stick and why some ideas stick and others fail. And one of the things they talk about in that book is this concept of the curse of knowledge, where you forget what it's like to not know what you know. And it's very, very easy for me to slip into that. Like earlier, I said it's also good for SEO. Some of you listening are like,
yes.
What's SEO?
Yes.
You know, that's jargon. It's search engine optimization. It's optimizing the site for search engines. And so there's no better solution that I can think of for overcoming the curse of knowledge than spending time with your customers. So earlier I joked, you know, now I mostly spend time in meetings. Well, a lot of those meetings are calls with customers. I still do all the sales calls with the company. And when I still go to writers' conferences and I take consultations, and I'll sit down with these, you know, folks, some of whom are, you know, old enough to be my mother or grandmother, and just answer their questions. And spending that time with a customer and knowing and having a feel for who the customer is really helpful. And we actually have, there's one author, I'm not going to say her name, that we found, who's kind of the quintessential author that we're working for. We have a plugin that we developed for showcasing your books on your website to sell through like Amazon and Barnes & Noble called My Book Table. And this is a older lady who installed it on her website that she built herself. And so every time we make a decision about the plugin, we're like, will this work for this lady? Will this feature make sense? Will she be able to understand this? And because we'll get into this big technical discussion, and very often the best way to do it, quote unquote best, most technically efficient way, wouldn't make sense for this lady. And so whoever can invoke her name in the meeting the most effectively typically will win the debate. And we have to keep reorienting ourselves because it's so easy. You know, as a nerd, you just start talking like a nerd and pretty soon people's eyes glaze over. And that's when you've lost the sale. No one wants to work with a company that's like that.
Do you feel, though, that that you have the threat of losing, how do I say this, losing the authority, the authoritative position in your circle of friends by talking so elementary on such an elementary level?
Well, there's an art to talking elementarily, and it's demonstrated very well by a doctor. So look at how a doctor, you go to the doctor and you've got a problem. Let's say you have an ear infection and he's got, you've got an endomyopic blah, 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 and it disputes all this Latin about the problem. And then he's like, this is what you need to do. You need to take this pill once a day for the next 12 days. And so he describes the problem in very technical jargon to establish that credibility. He's wearing this costume, this white, you know, lab coat that helps establish his credibility. There's plaques on the wall that establish his credibility. But when it comes to the actual prescription, it's very simple and straightforward. Now, his writing on the piece of paper may be unlegible, but what he's telling you is very simple. And so you have to know when to turn it on and when to turn it off. So that you don't lose that credibility. Because if you're always saying that thingy, you're not using any technical term. Yeah, that thingy on your website is broken. I'll get my people to fix it. You know, that can undermine your credibility. So you need to know the vocabulary and be able to know when to use it.
Mm. Oh, I love that line. Know the vocabulary and know when to use it. So I guess, you know, just going back to that little example there of the doctor. I had a doctor that last February, not this last one, the year before that, there was two ways to describe to me what I had going on. I had malignant carcinoma in situ, or he could just say, you have cancer. And the one would have been over my head. The other one's like, I know what this means. Right. And that's what you're talking about. It's just knowing where to do it. Now he can talk amongst his colleagues and it's going to be a whole lot easier for them to talk. Instead of using the basic terms of like, you know, cancer, they're starting to talk more specific because they can understand and niche down and understand more specifically what it is. But when they're talking to me, the patient, it's easy to understand because he's using common everyday language, correct?
That's right.
So with that, I get what you're saying then. It's just knowing which circles to talk in. So that to me is, it just really helps to kind of niche it down. And I guess also there's something else that I thought was really interesting there that you brought up was the collaboration of your team and having a specific avatar, as we would, so to speak, our specific target audience would be having that, keeping that in the forefront of your brain all the time. And that team effort, I think, really helps to kind of keep your head on straight too, as opposed to just kind of running about and figuring all this stuff out on yourself. Do you find that having the team effort with that avatar or target audience is key in keeping your language simple and easy to understand to be able to talk to the customer appropriately?
And also for making it helpful. So that the exercise of coming up with a person, we actually take our clients through that exercise for their readers, and we call it persona exercise, where you create this persona. And usually you get like a stock photo of a fictitious person who's a representative sample. But when you're writing to one person in specific, it makes all of your writing more clear. Hmm. In fact, one of my favorite sources for a blog post, somebody will send me an email asking a question. And if I send them back a response answering their technical question or whatever, and it's more than two or three paragraphs, I'll take that email and paste it into a blog draft. And that's a great initial start for blog draft, because I know that blog is answering at least one person's question. And so then I'll go in and I'll take out all the personally identifying information, you know, so there's no sensitive, no secrets being compromised. And then I'll add hyperlinks and photos and bullets, and I'll clean up the language and, you know, beef it up a little bit. But having that specific person in mind helps you as a blogger. It helps you as a team work together, because if you each have a different person in mind and with different needs and different questions, then you're not, you don't have that laser focus, which is so critical to getting that competitive edge. You know, we're not artist media, we're author media. You know, we're laser focused on authors. And for a lot of businesses, they're terrified. If I focus on the niche, people outside the niche aren't going to buy from me. And that's not true. We still do as many small business sites as we did before we focused our brand. In fact, we've done sites for either small businesses or nonprofits in three or four continents just in the last couple months. And the reality is, you can go to Red Lobster and buy a hamburger. And it's like, there's a kind of person who does that. They go to the seafood place and they order a steak. But if they were a generic food restaurant, they may not have gotten that customer at all, because knowing that you specialize in something gives people confidence to come, and it draws the person in. So we'll have maybe an author who will come and get a website from us, and then they start recommending us to their small business friends, or they're like, wow, I love my author website so much. Will you do my business website too?
So you would say that part of the glory of niching down is the ability to branch out.
It's a little bit counterintuitive, but think of it this way. A niche is painting a bullseye on a target. It's the red dot in the center of the target. And once you're aiming for that bullseye, you're more likely to hit other parts of the target too, where maybe outside of your niche, but the fact that you're aiming for the niche gives you that greater degree of focus, as opposed to just kind of, you know, shooting arrows willy-nilly, hoping to hit something.
Yeah, like a shotgun is going to hit everything, but it's not as nearly as effective as a rifle, correct?
Right. In fact, I've shot a shotgun at a target, and it's incredibly unsatisfying, because you can't tell you hit the target, because each little hole is so small that it's like it's this tiny little like pinprick almost in the target. You have to walk right up to the target to see that you've done anything. Whereas when you hit it with a rifle, your work is much more obvious.
Well, you know, it's funny that, you know, just thinking about that little analogy, you know, if you're out bird hunting, you want to use the shotgun because you're just kind of shooting generally in the right direction. And hopefully one of those pellets will hit that bird as it flies into the path of all those pellets as they're going through there. But if you want to take down, something a little bit bigger, having that laser focus is going to make all the difference in the world. Instead of hoping it flies into the path, I'm going to make sure that my path is going right into the heart of this specific target that I'm going for. And so I like that what you said is that one is more satisfying because you're really narrowing it in there.
Put another way, it's hard to feed your family with a shotgun. You know, birds may be fun and tasty, but, you know, that's one meal, you know, whereas you shoot a deer, that's a week's worth of meals. So if you're hungry as a business, it could be an indication that you're lacking that focus and you're not hunting the right kind of game, to beat this analogy to death.
Well, if it was a good analogy. Okay, let's talk about bows now, bows and arrows. So I like that idea there of how to talk to customers effectively. I think is an area that many, many people tend to miss the boat on. That also seems counterintuitive. If you want to sound like an authority, it seems like then use the authoritative words. But you're saying if you want to be effective to make the sale, then use the, not elementary, but the common use words. And you're going to be able to get a whole bunch more traction with that than you will other way around, correct?
That's right. Because what establishes your authority far more than knowing the right words, it's being able to explain something to somebody they didn't understand before, and now they understand it, and you're the one who explained it to them. They're like, oh, I get it now. That aha moment. There's nothing better than that aha moment when it comes to establishing your credibility. And you're not going to get the aha moment with lots of jargon.
Do you think that many people, I'm talking about people that are starting out in their business or maybe even further down the road, let's just say many people, do you feel that many people use the jargon because they're uncomfortable in not really knowing how to, really knowing what their niche is?
It's possible, and it's definitely a symptom of not being able to listen to your customers. And when I'm saying listening, I don't just mean with your ears, I mean with your eyes. Knowing when someone zoned out, if you can figure that out and be able to tie that in with what did I just say that caused them to zone out, can create this wonderful feedback loop where you're listening with your whole person. And the challenge is for entrepreneurs is that we're very excited about our businesses. And once you kind of poke that, you know, topic, we just go off. And, you know, 15 minutes later, we're still going on and on about our business. And in reality, we probably lost somebody 13 minutes ago. In the last, you know, 10 minutes, we've just been turning them off. And so learning how to listen, learning how to cultivate curiosity in others, that's not just something that you do. It's a learned skill. But it's something that can be learned with practice.
You know, you said something else there that I thought was intriguing, and you didn't expound upon it, but I want to just make sure that I that I caught what you said. You said that you lost them 10 minutes ago. Now, how critical is it to be able to not only speak common language, but also to speak succinctly and with brevity? Is that critical?
It is. And the easiest way to speak succinctly is to use lots of jargon, because the jargon word has a bunch of meaning in it. So for somebody who understands what SEO is, that's a short little word for a whole phrase. And so learning how to speak succinctly without learning how to use a lot of jargon, that is the real coup de grace. And that just takes practice, but it can be done.
So we've been talking about connecting with your customer. And you said, number one, the biggest thing that you feel like the very secret to success is answering customers' questions using their language. What else is a critical way to be able to connect well with your customer?
So anticipate their needs. There's a great quote from Henry Ford, and he said, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said they wanted a faster horse. And so listening means listening to what they're saying, but it also means listening to what they're not saying and kind of looking into their lives and how you can make their lives better. And if you can meet a need that someone doesn't realize that they have, that's where millions turn into billions. That's the secret of Apple computers. You know, Steve Jobs did that 3 times. He did it with a personal computer or the Macintosh. He did it with the iPhone, and then he did it again with the iPad. You know, no one felt their need for an iPad until it came out, right? I remember when it first came out, everyone's like, what do we do with this? But it didn't take very long for everyone to figure out, hey, there's a lot of very useful things. And a lot of folks, like my mom, switched to using an iPad almost exclusively instead of her computer. And so if the second thing I would say, most important, second to listening to your customers, is listening in such a way where you can anticipate their needs and then finding a way to meet those needs. Because if you take care of your customers are going to take care of you.
So far, I've got 3 things that you have nailed down here. You said one is answer the questions using their language. Secondly, anticipate their needs and knowing that those needs may not be what they think they need, but just anticipating their needs. And then thirdly is that find a way to resolve that need or answer that need. Is that correct?
That's right. Every business ultimately is in the customer need fulfillment business. If you're not fulfilling somebody's need, why would they choose to give you money? And unless you've got the government, you know, forcing people to buy your product or you're putting a gun in someone's face, you have to earn people's money. They have to choose that they would rather have your product or service than their money, which means you've got to thrill them in some way. You've got to make their life better in some way. And so if you can just do that one thing, everything else, that's like the top button on your shirt. If you get the top button, all the other buttons kind of fall into line.
That's such a great idea. I don't know how many times I have in my lifetime gotten the wrong button in the wrong place, and it just looks goofy the rest of the way down.
What's really embarrassing is when you don't catch it until you're already at the office.
Yes.
But the metaphor works, though, for business. Yes. Profit is not the top button. Yes. And a lot of companies, they that profit button, which is a middle button, it's a profit is an outcome of taking care of your customers. Mm. And so if you're not focusing on the customers and other stakeholders too, employees, investors, the environment, you know, you got to look at it holistically. But ultimately, if your customers aren't happy, you're not going to last very long.
I love that idea that profit is an outcome of meeting needs. That is just a brilliant idea. And the first thing you said is that earning or profits is not the first button. It's the secondary or maybe even tertiary. There's jargon right there, tertiary, the third. But I sounded important, didn't I?
Very credible. Very credible.
Very credible. Look at that. Paul knows tertiary.
Tertiary, yeah.
Yes. So I really like that. This is, you know, Thomas, you and I were talking beforehand, and I had a whole different path I wanted to walk down with you. And I may have to just say, Thomas, let's do that again another time because we're running out of time. But this idea about connecting with customers, like how to connect with your customer, is so critical. This is the secret of how a business succeeds or doesn't succeed, is how well they connect with the customer. And if they aren't connecting with the customer, then what's the point of having the business? They're not going to have a business. What they have is busyness, not business. Correct?
That's right. And tying in with a couple episodes ago, you had a guy on talking about Facebook advertising.
Yes.
This is a great way to connect with your customers through social media and specifically through Facebook advertising. So the old way to find out data about your customers is to have a focus group. You know, the problem with focus groups is that the most opinionated person in the room tends to sway the room and that they give you inconsistently accurate information and they're really expensive, you know, $10,000 for a good focus group or more. So we found how to do a focus group for $50 on Facebook. And we discovered this while working with a political candidate. He's running for office and he's trying to decide what language to use to describe himself, kind of as his like tagline. And so we tested three words: Republican for Texas Supreme Court, conservative for Texas Supreme Court, and patriot for Texas Supreme Court. And what we did is we targeted likely voters. We targeted our quote unquote customers. I realize with politics, it's a little bit differently. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we had the exact same ad to the customers with the one word difference. So some people saw patriot, some people saw conservative. Oh, and we also tested constructionist because John McCain had just used that word his whole presidential campaign, and that was his judicial philosophy. So constructionist was the most useful word for knowing kind of where he stood on the issues. So then we did the test, and after about $50 into the test, we had a very clear answer. And the clear answer was no one knows what the heck a constructionist is. Constructionist judge. That did not get hardly any clicks. The next popular was Republican. People weren't very excited about a Republican running in a Republican primary. Everybody is a Republican. Next was conservative. Got a little bit better than Republican. But then the next word after that was patriot. Was two or three times more popular. And we had made this key market insight that people, that word really resonated with people. And so we were able to then take that word and put it throughout all of the marketing communications, both online and offline. And when he even worked it into his speeches, he's like, I'm a patriot running for Texas Supreme Court. And, you know, those kinds of discoveries are very inexpensive if you know how to use the tools. And even the constructionist ad still brought fans to the page. You know, it was still an advertisement that was still getting people connected and engaged. So even the failure was a success in that way. And you can do these kinds of tests with product names. You can do these kinds of tests with all sorts of things. One cool way to do it, if you're an author, you can test your book title this way. So you have three or four book titles, you're not sure which is the right title, or three or four covers, you're not sure which is the right cover. You do a Facebook ad and you can test those different covers and see which one gets the most clicks. Another way to do this, you can use Google Ads. So the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferriss. Are you familiar with that book?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He tested, I think, half a dozen or a dozen different titles for that book. And The 4-Hour Workweek got the most clicks on Google. And that's why he went with that with his title. And it became a New York Times bestselling book.
Huh. Fascinating. Thomas, this is absolutely fascinating. I love that. The idea of using Facebook ads. And being able to niche it down like that. The episode you were referring to was Rick Mulready's episode. And it is, what he did say was pretty brilliant about being able to niche it down. And I like that you talked about niching it down into specifically into Texas and not just making it, you know, willy-nilly wherever, but into the constituencies of that particular person. But brilliant. I love that. I love that research that you talked about there. Well, Thomas, what I'd like to do is I'd like to change gears just a little bit here and go into what I call the six-shooter round. And in the six-shooter round, what we're going to do is I'm going to fire some questions at you, and I'm going to ask you to fire back your answers, and hopefully in the process we'll take out a few doubts. You ready to do it?
All right, let's go.
Okay. What's the number one thing a person needs to do to succeed in connecting with their customers?
Listen. I mean, we've kind of already talked about that, but if you can't listen, nothing else will happen.
I love that. If you can't listen, nothing else will happen. That was brilliant. How about happiness? What's the key to happiness, Thomas?
Happiness is a byproduct of shooting for other things. So if you, it's kind of like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You never get to the end of the rainbow. And so if you're trying to get to the end of the rainbow, if you're trying to get to happiness, you're never going to get there. But you often get happiness while shooting for something else, service of others, a higher calling. You know, for me, my Christian faith is a key part of that. But if you're shooting for happiness all by itself, that leads to a very selfish, sad life. and it doesn't, it doesn't work.
I love it. What's one thing you wish you knew about connecting with customers before you ever got started?
One thing I wish I'd have known was better how to figure out what people are needing in terms of where their budget is. Because there's what people want, and then there's what people are willing to pay for. So there's what people say they want, and then what people really want. And learning how to separate those things is can be a little bit of a challenge.
Hmm. How about mistakes? What's the biggest mistake you see other entrepreneurs making in terms of connecting with their customers?
Having too broad of a niche early on. So you can always grow your niche from something small to something big, but often they try to focus on too many completely different areas. And I totally did this. Instead of it just being Author Media, we had like Mercy Media and WebRoots Media, and we had all these different media companies that were trying to target these different niches, and it was a disaster. And everything got better when we just focused on just one niche. And to our surprise, it didn't come at the expense of the other niches. You know, we still got sales in those channels, but we were far more appealing to authors because we were like, we do authors. That is what we do. We take care of authors who are not tech savvy, and that put non-tech savvy authors at ease. They're like, okay, this is something I can do. It's not going to be a disaster like my last two websites were.
I love it. How about a resource? What's a go-to resource that you'd say, in order to connect with customers well, I should have this resource in my back pocket?
Couple, Google Analytics is a key resource. You may already have it on your website, but I would do some Google searches. There's some great videos that kind of walk you through how to use it. Google Analytics, if you use it well, can tell you a lot about your customers. I have a podcast on marketing, a novel marketing podcast, where we talk about some of this. It's pretty focused on authors, though. So if you're not an author, it may not be a good fit. And other resources for connecting with customers, I would say Twitter. Find your customers on Twitter and on Google Plus, and follow them and read their posts. See what they're talking about. See what their interests are, their hopes, their fears, their dreams. Again, yeah, there's many ways to listen, and talking to somebody in person is only one of those.
I really like that. In person is only one of those. I love it. How about a book? What's one book that you'd recommend for connecting with customers that you think this is the book that is going to help our listeners understand better how to connect well with their customers?
It's hard to recommend just one. So there's the classic How to Win Friends and Influence People, but I'm going to assume everybody's already read that. The book that I think is the most interesting on this, and it's actually two books together, it's The Go-Giver, which is kind of a parable. It's a pretty short book. And then there's a follow-up book to it called Go Givers Sell More. And it's a book on sales focused on giving to customers instead of taking. So it's like the polar opposite of that used car salesman approach, where every interaction with a customer is a positive interaction. And that positive interaction may be telling them, you know, we're not for you, or referring them to a competitor. But if your goal is, I'm here to help the people that I'm talking to, and I can help them on every call, it makes sales calls less intimidating. And it also makes the sales more effective. And it's been very interesting. Sometimes I'm telling somebody we're not for you, as I'm trying to talk them out of buying our product, they're trying to talk themselves into it. Like, no, seriously, this isn't a gimmick. We really aren't for you. But I found that that book, because I'm not a sales, I don't like sales. I find it really draining. And the Go Giver Sell More was an approach to sales that I felt, it's like, finally, this is a book Seth Godin would like and approve of.
Very good. Okay, my last question for you, Thomas, is a two-part question. What are the top three don'ts, and what are the top three do's every entrepreneur ought to focus on in terms of connecting with their customers?
Do keep an eye on the bottom line. And I guess there's a don't that goes along with this. Don't forget to look at your financials. So it is important to keep an eye on your customers, but you have to have another eye on your own financials, because ultimately you're not serving your customers well if you go out of business. If you can't do it profitably, if it's not sustainable, you might be helping them in the short term, but you're not helping them in the long term. And that's a mistake that we've made, where we are looking, kind of had both eyes on the customer, and we weren't looking at our own financials. And so, you know, it's work. You have to do bookkeeping, and you have to get reports, and you have to read through these financial statements. You're like, oh, I don't want to do this. I just want to make great products. Don't do that. That's a classic mistake. Another do is find advisors. Find people who've done this before, people who've been successful, and people who have failed. I found that the best advisors are folks who have overcome adversity and have succeeded after adversity, not the folks who just got lucky. So if somebody's not really faced any adversity, they're going to be giving you advice, and you don't know if that's a good advice or if they just got lucky or not. They don't make as good of an advisor. So find some old men and women to speak into your life and to kind of warn you when you're on a wrong path. And another do would be to take care of yourself. Pace yourself. You got to, you know, get your own oxygen mask on before you help the person next to you. So if you're burning yourself out, it's not going to be helpful, again, for your customers in the long run. No one wants a, you know, fly-by-night company. You know, people want to work with companies that have been around for a while and that will be around for a while. It reduces people's stress working with the company. It increases their trust. You know, if I see a company and it's the grandson who's running the company and it's very profitable, you know, that's much more appealing to me than a brand new company with no track record. And so you want to kind of plan for the long term and kind of begin with the end in mind, as Covey would say.
Very good. And you kind of mix the don'ts and the do's in there all together. And I'm not sure, did I grab the last don't?
I may have left out a don't. Don't spend a lot of money. A good lesson we learned the hard way. Don't spend a lot of money on an office if you don't need one. So we started off, the company's based out of my house, and then I was out of a co-working space for a while. Then we started spending a lot of money for a fancy office. And that has been an expense that has not been a good investment, because the reality is that our customers are all over the world. You know, we're excited when someone's just in our own time zone, and no one cares what our office looks like. We've got this big fancy show that no one's coming to because they're all just calling in and Skyping, and, you know, all of the employees are here in the building and we just Skype to each other. It's like, we could have been doing this from home and saving all this money on rent and electricity and internet and telephones. I mean, offices are a lot more expensive than they look like, and you need to justify it. I mean, if you're a dentist, it makes sense. If you're actually doing physical work and you need to interact with somebody, you know, if you're a psychologist, it could be hard to do that remotely. But for a company like ours, we are delivering a digital product. You know, our the websites we build are on servers that are hosted, you know, on the cloud, wherever that is. We could have saved ourselves a lot of money and headache by not getting such a fancy office.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that. I really love it. And if people wanted to get in touch with you, Thomas, how would they go about that? What's the best way to get in contact with you?
Authormedia.com. We have our blog there where we answer a lot of questions like that. There's a contact page. And if you're interested in a website, I do all the sales calls. So free 15-minute consultation. You just fill out the form right there at authormedia.com.
I love it. Well, Thomas, this has been such a great conversation. And like I said earlier, I probably want to get you back in some other time just to be able to talk about the topic that I told you about beforehand. But for today, the way that this ended up going to me was just brilliant about how to connect with your customer. And you gave us three steps that I thought were so beautiful. Answer the customer's questions in their language, anticipate their needs, and find a way to solve the need. To me, that is just the most brilliant summation of how to make that connection. And the end result is, if you make the connection, we're talking about making the sales then. We're talking about meeting the needs. We're talking about making an impact and changing the world. So, Thomas, it just wraps everything up into one beautiful ball of success. I love that. It's just gorgeous. And the six shoot around, Thomas, was beautiful. And some of it, I knew exactly what you were going to say when I asked you about the question of success. I ask everybody that question, but I knew that you were going to say something like, listen. It was so, it's so true. And so I tell you, all the way through this, Thomas, I felt like we were getting just so much great rubber meets the road advice on how to connect well with your customers. So I just loved our conversation, Thomas. So listen, you've made our lives better. So we raise our cups to you, and lots of love to you, Thomas.
All right. Thank you for having me on the show.
And that concludes another episode of Doubt the Doubts. And I so appreciated Thomas and what he had to say there. So, and I appreciate you listening in also into the conversation. And hopefully you're getting some great takeaways for your life and for getting some ideas how to run your business better or how to run your business when you start it. Either which way, I hope that your life was encouraged. Hey, listen, lots of love to all of you. Go do something great with your life and make a difference in this world.
You've been listening to Doubt the Doubts. Now it's your turn to say, I can do it.